Hello, listener, and welcome to yet another. They said it shouldn't happen, but it keeps on happening. Yet another episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes. I'm making it up. It's just rhetoric. It's pure rhetoric. Yet another episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes, and the listener will be wearily familiar with the fact that what we do on the Zeitgeist Tapes is we take something in popular culture, a piece of fiction, drama, maybe a novel, if we've got the energy to read, and talk about the politics of it in all kinds of different ways. And perhaps inevitably, wearily, inevitably, we are going to be talking... She's bouncy. I haven't introduced her yet, but she's still bouncy. We're going to talk about Succession, because everybody else is talking about Succession. But before we do that, I should introduce myself. But because I'm very polite and a gentleman and highly sexist, my co-host, Emma Burnell. Hello, Emma.
Hi, Steve.
And I'm Stephen Fielding, Emeritus Professor of whatever at Nottingham University.
That's a great thing to be Emeritus Professor of, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, can't tie you down. So, Emma, we're talking about Succession. Now, if our listener hasn't heard of Succession, as I say, one of the reasons why we're talking about Succession is because everybody else is talking about Succession, at least in my little bit of Twitter. I don't know about you. Succession is, if you don't know, is about, the clue is in the name, it's about three children. I mean, there are four children, but really there's only three. Shiv, Kendall, and Roman Roy, who are the offspring of Logan Roy, who is, or is he not, a kind of Rupert Murdoch figure, who is kind of on his last legs. And the whole thing is, who is going to succeed Logan Roy, the great, not Rupert Murdoch figure? And in some senses, it has been seen as echoing, playing off, riffing off the actual Murdoch issue with the various siblings all seemingly battling out, or are they, for the mantle of successor of Rupert. Now, we'll put that one to one side. It's been going for four seasons. It's just ended.
And we will be talking about that ending. So if anyone hasn't seen the final episode, then stop now and come back when you have.
Yeah, but if you don't know by now, where have you been on Twitter? At least our part of Twitter.
I haven't seen it being spoiled on Twitter. People have been very well behaved. Right. So discussing it in the round rather than this is what happened.
So why are we talking about it, Emma? I mean, what's to talk about in this? Because I've had a little discussion on Twitter the other day with somebody who said, well, it is what it is. It's just a bit of entertainment.
I mean, ultimately, you can say that about any of the things that we talk about, but that's not true. Entertainment tells us a great deal about who we are as people, who we are as society. It reflects back to us certain thoughts that we have, or challenges certain thoughts that we have, or pushes a point of view that we don't see as right at all. That's literally why we do this podcast. And in terms of Succession, what it absolutely covered, and particularly more and more in the last two seasons, particularly the last season, which ran concurrently with their fictional American presidential election, is the interaction between giant media corporations and politics. So there was the small p politics of the family, the business, the people who surrounded them, a lot of which reflects the kind of power dynamics in politics. But there was also equally, in particularly in our terms, a direct line to the candidates who wanted to be president, and a vying for which one of those the media corporation and particularly its news division would push, almost entirely driven not by the political sensibilities of the people at the top of the organisation, but what might be best for the business deal they were trying to conduct.
And then the business deals that they were trying to construct were all about them. It was all about how can I, one of the three or two of the three siblings, get control of the company that their father, before he died, he does die, before he died, and then after he died, get control of all of that. So it's all very, thing is, it's all very solipsistic, it's all very narcissistic. It's all about these three characters and the people that hang on to them. And I mean, you know, you talked about the politics of the family. I mean, the more, I only really started watching it as the fourth season had started.
Oh, me too, actually. I watched seasons 1 to 3 very quickly before the fourth.
Which is what I did, yeah. And the only reason I watched it is because there were all these people on Twitter going, oh, Succession, oh. And I'd resisted it for so long. And I thought, oh, and I got a, frankly, illegal Amazon stick. And yeah, it's bad. And there were two things I wanted to watch.
You do know this goes out in public, Steve, right?
Yeah, everybody does it, by the way. Everybody does it. So I'm outing myself. There were two things I wanted to watch. One was Succession and one was Ted Lasso. And I started watching Ted Lasso. We can talk about Ted Lasso. Yeah, no. She's pulling her face like, oh, bless. Oh, Ted Lasso. Oh, so anyway. So I eventually caught up with the last two episodes. So I had to wait, you know. I went to the point where, oh no, yeah, what? Where is it? How my human rights are being denied, and wait a couple of weeks, which was, you know, probably quite salutary. This is how we should really watch things. This is how people used to, and that's, you can then think about it, talk about it, and all of that. But I was drawn in because all these other people said, "Oh, it's so great," and then I was thinking, "What is this about?" You know, I mean, I liked it because it was very witty. I mean, the three characters, I mean, well, every character's got zingers. I mean, it's really well written. My main question is about that, though, is most of these characters are thick as two short planks. You know, they're incompetent, they're self-involved, their rhetorical powers are very, very weak. They say the F word a lot, Rita. They mumble, they pull faces more than they speak. And yet, all these zingers are coming out left, right, and centre. Totally, I think, out of character. Well, she's not, you know, well, she's pulling her face. But anyway, so the writing is really, really good, though maybe there's some questions about the relevance of it. But what's it ultimately about? It's about three spoilt rich kids with daddy issues. And why should I care? And
because
what
those are the people who run the world, Steve.
Well, I know that.
I mean, you don't think that Kendall is blatantly Elon Musk, then you're not paying attention. Elon Musk is that mumbly fuckwit guy who wants to be on stage doing a rap whilst also occasionally having a decent zinger, probably written for him by a series of scriptwriters.
Yes, yes.
You know, we are in a point now where inherited wealth, which, let's face it, Elon Musk has. He's not actually as self-made as he likes to pretend.
Like Donald Trump, yes.
Donald Trump, absolutely. These are the people running the world. And that's what this whole show is exploring. You know, there is no chance until the end that it won't be one of these three people. That it turns out to be none of them is an interesting choice. And it was so interesting, actually, because I was watching it and I was like, oh, it's going to be Kendall. It's going to be Kendall. It's going to be Kendall. It's going to be Shiv. It's going to be Shiv. It's never going to be Roman, in my opinion, ever. And then as soon as it was clear that it was Tom, I'm like, of course, it could only ever have been Tom.
I'm going, yes.
And not just Tom, but Tom and Greg.
Well, yeah, maybe Tom and Greg, but you could see it coming at you like that meteor that's bound to hit the Earth at some point and destroy us all. You could see it coming. I mean, partly because I've seen I, Claudius, so I know that how it turns out.
No, spoilers. We're doing that later on, aren't we?
No, I Claudius starts. Well, thing is, I, Claudius, which, by the way, listener, if you don't know, just shame on you, a 1976 BBC adaptation of the novels of Robert Graves about the early Augustan era in the Roman Empire, blah, 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 right? And it's brilliant, very good. But I, Claudius, starts with you knowing, really, he's going to be emperor. So this is a story of how he becomes emperor, right?
Right.
So you're always in on the joke. You're always in on the joke. What I found was interesting, what you just said, is what other, these other people who I, you know, I think very, you know, I take what they say seriously about various other things, about how they were drawn in to this, oh, who will inherit? Who will do this? Who will do that?
No, and frankly, I didn't like myself for it. Because no. I didn't like any of them, so I couldn't.
Jeffrey Archer. That's what Jeffrey Archer does, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not interesting. It wasn't. The characters aren't interesting.
Oh, see, I disagree. I can find people interesting that I also loathe.
Yeah, but there wasn't much to like. Well, there was nothing to like. There's very little to like. There were certain temps, but there wasn't very much. But there was so much to dislike. They were all dislikable people.
But I mean, isn't that the truth of it?
But thinly dislikable. I mean, you know, I didn't care about any of them, which may be the point. Because, as I say, to go back to my, you know, the urtext of I, Claudius, you did kind of care because there were people who, I mean, this isn't a programme about I, Claudius, by the way, but
no,
I'm going to.
We are going to do I, Claudius at some point, so we should probably veer off a little.
We'll do it in the future. But there were people in I, Claudius who cared about the Roman Republic, who had this idea about this is how we should do things. And they were constantly being killed by the people who wanted to retain the empire for their own purposes, right? So there were heroes who were all, in the end, eviscerated. There was somebody to care for. Often they were a bit stupid, but there was evil geniuses who were kind of getting through them all. But in succession, and this may be deliberate and maybe part of the universe in which we actually live, There was nobody there to root for and to think, oh, that might, well, yeah, they'd be quite good. None of them, even the nephew, whatever his name is, and Tom, whose surname I still can't pronounce.
Wormscam or
Big Scam, I don't know what it was. But, you know, there was nobody. Everybody was horrible to different degrees, weren't they? And maybe that's the point, but there was no rooting for me.
Everyone was horrible to different degrees, but what they were, interestingly, was horrible in different ways. And I think that, for me, was the power of the writing. Mm-hmm. They were all deeply flawed. They were all deeply flawed because they had this, you know, from the start, terrible relationship with both parents, who were awful parents in very different ways.
Yeah.
But they manifested that in completely different ways. So you had Roman, who was just a complete kind of libertine.
Well, except he couldn't get it up, could he?
But yeah, a sexually incompetent libertine, which is in its own way a deeply interesting flaw.
Yeah.
He could masturbate over a much older woman, and that was about it.
Yes, behind the door.
You had Kendall, who had substance abuse issues, but equally had this deep feeling of that he wasn't cool enough. Kendall's driving characteristic, I felt, was not simply that he wanted to be the runner of the thing, because he'd just always been told that that was what was going to happen to him.
When he was 8 years old.
He was deeply uncool. And all of the times that he fucked up, it was usually because he was trying to be the cool kid. And then you had good girl Siobhan, Shiv, as she was almost entirely known.
Yes.
Who, you know, was off kind of being a political consultant to a Democrat, clearly, you know, trying to change the world. And yet every time it actually mattered, she chose the family, she chose the money, she chose the job.
Yes.
So she was flawed idealism. You know, idealism that doesn't actually ever actually manifest. So I thought that was, you know, the depth of the writing for me was in the differences between the three flawed people. It wasn't just, oh, here's three flawed people that you don't care about. It's let's explore over four series how these individual and different flaws manifest and take these people on these journeys.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in the end, I mean, I raced through the three seasons, and I mean, I enjoyed it. Maybe I slightly hated myself for it, but I did enjoy it a bit for the writing. But by the time, you know, you got to the fourth, I was getting a bit bored, to say the least, with Shiv pulling her face. You know, stop pulling your face, right? It's always the same flipping face. And it was all getting very samey. And I don't know at what point I thought, there are so many twists. I mean, I had this line in my head, so I'm going to use it. There are so many twists in the plot, you know, between, oh, what kind of a deal is going to go? It's going to take that bit out. We'll put this bit in. Who's going to be in charge? You know, oh, I'll support you, Shiv. No, I'll support you, Kendall. No, we'll do this. We'll do that. Oh, no, it's the other way around now. There were so many twists and turns. It might have just have been a straight line, right? I mean, it was all futile.
Well, it kind of
maybe
was a
straight
line.
That was the point. Maybe that
might
was
be the point. I think that is the point, that ultimately this is where it was always going to end. I had a different experience. I found seasons one and two slow going. It took me a real while to get into it. And I got into it for the same reason you did. Everyone was bloody talking about it. And so I decided to, and I found at first I could only watch an episode a day. I couldn't binge it the way I would something else. By the third season, though, it picked up for me, and I was kind of watching two, three, four in a day. And I think in a way that's when we started settling into the shape of the end deal. So it then became about the toing and froing around the Matheson deal. And that was more interesting than who's going to succeed Logan in the shape of the company as it is now.
I mean, the thing is, I keep coming back to the same point. I just didn't really care. I mean, I was interested in the different deals and this and that and the other. I mean, the machinations, but I really didn't care, you know, who got it, who didn't get it. I didn't really care, you know, was it going to be Logan and Kendall against Shiv, or was Shiv going to do something? I really kind of didn't care at all. And I was kind of interested, though, why I was watching it and why all these other people were watching it and why you would watch something about people who are way up there, who, as you say, these are the people that at least govern certain aspects of the world in which we live and maybe shape how we think, or lots of other people think about the world in which we live. And they're all nasty, meaningless little shits. So what am I? Why am I getting enjoyment from this? I mean, just what? Enjoy your own oppression. Is this what's going on? Because what it didn't do was really tell me anything I kind of didn't already know. Yeah, like, you know, Elon Musk has kind of outed himself. You know, all the little machinations are reported in the Murdoch family. You know, it's not about anything big. It's about them, which are, you know, they're big people because they've got a lot of money and stuff. But it's not really about, you know, anything. And why am I watching these people do all that to, you know, little people like me? And moreover, this is not a new thing, is it, really? I mean, I can think of all kinds of examples. I mean, I talked about I, Claudius in terms of, like, the historical
there
stuff.
There are clear Shakespearean allusions throughout, being the most obvious one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, but I mean, the point I guess I'm kind of groping for here is this kind of circus of nastiness. I write that down. I was going to definitely say circus of nastiness. The circus of nastiness that is Succession isn't exactly unprecedented. I mean, because I've looked at old telly and stuff, there was something called the Power Game in the 1960s. And the main character was really a piece of shit, you know? I mean, he put the ante into anti-hero, kind of a businessman. Politics was drawn in. It was all shown to be corrupt and corrupted and everything. You know, that was big. That was big time in 1960s telly.
Academic, here's my question to you then. You've studied this Power Game program. Years after, presumably, it was on. I don't imagine you were studying it in your short trousers.
I was watching The Monkees and Batman.
Quite right too. But why has that stayed in the public consciousness? Because you're the academic, you've presumably looked into this. Like, there is clearly an appeal to this. So what is it that people tell you when you go and investigate as to why people watch this, why they enjoy it, why they find it so compelling?
I've never asked.
Tell you why I do, but I'm not sure more generally. You're asking why we watch these things.
No, I don't know, because I don't know that people have ever really been asked, why do you like watching this big, horrible, nasty person who is a fictional representation of the very kind of people who are screwing you over on a daily basis, and you're liking it? You know, why are you watching Dallas? Why are you watching...
Dallas was exactly where my brain went when you were saying that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's like, I mean, I found when I used to be looking at sort of why, about historical dramas, period dramas of the 1970s, the most depressing thing, because people are asking, why are people watching all this stuff? And literally the costumes, right? Why are rural dramas very popular? Oh, because of the nice houses, right? There are some people who watch this kind of thing because, oh, that's a nice location. Oh, where do they get those tables from? You know, there are those kinds of people who just like watching the lifestyles of the rich and famous, and they abstract what those people are really, really doing from all of that, right? So that's something. But beyond that, I don't really know. Maybe people watch it because they don't know what really goes on, and they think this is what's going to give them an insight. But the insight's usually the same. They're all horrible, right? They're all horrible to each other. They're horrible to people like us. So I don't know, really. I can find no explanation which isn't depressing about that.
But surely academia doesn't get to choose between depressing and non-depressing answers. The truth is what you're seeking.
Yeah. I mean, there was an earlier time before the Second World War where Hollywood and British cinema was like pumping out stories about eccentric, lovable millionaires, right? And there was a time when they would never have been depicted in those terms. And this, by the way, was after the 1929 Wall Street crash, where millionaires were being presented as, oh, I'm just a bit crazy. Oh, aren't I nice? And then, I mean, you know, some of your most successful actors of that period played these characters. So that's, something's changed, certainly. I mean, the idea you can have a lovable banker doing nice things in the end. No, I mean, Succession is the antidote Succession should be the antidote for a kind of deferential looking up to our betters. You should look up and think, they're horrible people, but let's watch more of that. And let's talk about it. But what do we do about it?
I think there's a difference between enjoying watching horrible people and venerating them. I don't think anyone came away from Succession going, well, I'm a Kendall. What are you? Yeah, there was none of that sort of the thing that we had with Friends, where which friend are you or which Sex and the City character are you? No one was like, oh, I think on my best days, I'm a Shiv, but, you know, I really, deep down, I'm a Roman. There's none of that.
That's what I'm saying. There is no way that could provoke a deferential interpretation and, oh, I wish it was a bit more like Tom. I mean, they were all horrible and also screwed up in all kinds of different ways.
Now, I think we should talk about Tom, because I think Tom is, in many ways, the moral of the tale.
Okay. What is the moral?
In the first season, Tom gets married with what seems to be optimism and love. He loves Shiv, and he, even though it's made very, very clear that she's not that into him.
Yeah.
Tom is tenacious and will eat shit, as he says quite regularly. He will eat all the shit until he gets to the end. And at the end, he's the CEO.
Yeah.
And it's that rise of tenacious mediocrity, I think, that I found quite interesting as a commentary.
Well, I always think that defines my career, such as it ever was, tenacious mediocrity. Because I always used to say, this is after I finished it, and my PhD, that is, because people think, oh, PhD, you've got to be brilliant, you've got to be this, got to be that. Well, maybe. But really, really, to finish a PhD, you've really got to work at it. You know, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. So there is some kind of I mean, if there's a life lesson, that's the life lesson. If you're an outsider, if you're an out, because of course Tom was the outsider. He's the one that had nothing.
Tom was
the
outsider. Greg was
middle class,
equally
middle of the West.
Almost outsider. He was just a sort of second cousin type guy.
Yes.
And Tom managed. So Tom and Greg's relationship throughout, Tom bullied Greg horribly. Yes. But also they had quite a symbiotic relationship where they rose through the ranks together. So when we first meet Greg, he's literally in a costume in a theme park at the same point that Tom is head of the theme park's division.
Yes.
By the end of it, Tom has been brought in as CEO of the whole thing, and Greg is quite clearly his right-hand man.
Yeah, yeah, the Disgusting Brothers or what they call themselves.
Yes.
Yes. Now, right, maybe you can continue that, but that just provokes a thought, because when I first was it the first episode where cousin Greg appears and he's clearly a waster. I mean, he's out of the family really for all kinds of reasons. Nobody really knows he exists, and he's just an employee at this theme park, and he's in a bear costume and he's throwing up because he's had too much weed. And the thing is, I thought, I didn't know who he was, the character was at this point. I thought, oh, that's interesting. What they're going to do? They're going to contrast, you know, the lifestyles of the rich and famous. And then they're going to show how the people are really treated in these places. And there's going to be something going on. And very, very rarely did you get an insight into what it was like to be. And I thought, you know, that would have been actually quite interesting if they managed to do that, but they didn't. They just went zoom back into Howard's Way territory.
I would have found that cheap.
Okay.
I don't think you needed the contrast. I think when they were walking the streets, you saw the contrast, although they very rarely did. I read a very interesting comment that you never see them wearing a coat, almost, because they
just
in and out of helicopters all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Also because Logan's Scottish and therefore coats are illegal. but they also, you did get a few moments. So you got that thing at the employees' picnic in the very, very first episode.
Yes.
A young, quite clearly not rich family, young boy.
Oh, yeah.
Roman offers him, like, I think $10,000 if he hits a home run, and then he doesn't. So he has a checkup in front of him.
Yeah, that's horrible, isn't it?
So that kind of sets the scene. But I think if they did that in every episode, it would have just, I think it would have felt unrealistic. The point of these people is they never have to deal with the little people. They never see.
That's true. Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, obviously they decided that isn't what they would do, but I just thought, oh, that's, I anticipated that they might, and then they didn't. I mean, very, like you said, very occasionally, like when Roman has to go and do the management training, is it'll be, you know, 101 management training down in the depths of the company, and then he kind of engages with a fairly odd black guy, who's obviously very clever but weird, and then he says when Roman gets back, oh, make sure that guy is employed. And then we never see him again, which is kind of thought, well, that was a bit of a missed opportunity too. Because, I mean, again, probably because of the world in which they live, there are hardly any black characters. But then that's a reflection. That's like Friends. That's like Seinfeld. That's the world in which they live. So it seems a bit daft to say that. But so, they would obviously decided we're just going to look at these people. And it would have been a very different kind of a show had they done that. But I just thought, oh, and then they didn't. So I thought that was an interesting choice, but that was what they wanted to do. But back to Tom. Has got any more to say about Tom and Greg, or Tom and Gregged out?
I think once it was him, it was inevitable.
Yeah.
I thought the ending, I don't remember Roman's ending at all, last shot at all. I think they just sort of stopped caring.
He'd kind of blown it at the funeral, didn't he, really? The funeral.
He blew it at the funeral. It was quite clear after that he wasn't going to be the guy.
No.
Connor was never really going to be the guy, but he gets the house, which I thought was, again, quite interesting. He just sort of got the family home. The last two shots that you see are Shiv and Tom in the car together, having sort of vaguely decided to get back together.
Yeah.
And they're holding hands in the least romantic way you can possibly depict it. It's so like, you know, that last scene of The Graduate where they run off and they're giggling and then suddenly they realize they've got absolutely nothing to say to each other.
Yeah, on the bus.
It's like that, but 5 years on. So there's that. They're now stuck with each other. Shiv is stuck with Tom. She doesn't love him. She never has. Tom's got Shiv, but knows that she doesn't love him, but is stuck with her because she's pregnant with his baby. And then Kendall is sat by the water's edge on a beautiful sunny day, and that was clearly a choice, with the sun shining on his face. And maybe Kendall's the one who's ended up, despite the fact that he wanted it the most, the one who's most released by not getting it.
These are all plausible. This is all very plausible. I mean, I don't really care. I mean, the thing is, it was a never ending. I wrote that down before I came up with that before we just did this, listener, and I'm determined to get it in. It was a never ending because that wasn't an ending, because you can anticipate there's another episode where it all kind of it's all unpicked. They're all back in again. You know, that ending could have happened.
No, except the Matheson deal has gone through. So the Matheson
deal has been unpicked. You can see how they were.
There's no longer shareholder earnings.
Yeah.
The president inside. It's not gonna. There's no long. Yeah, they've tied up all the loose ends.
I could see them all being unpicked again. Could see them all being unpicked again. So I don't think it. I mean, if they ever do it again, which I do hope they don't, because you know, I think it could have ended at least a season before. At least I don't think it really resolved anything in particular, because you've just said you've asked questions about it, and maybe that again was the point of it, but it wasn't an ending. You just knew the ending. Thing is, you knew the ending was coming, so you're looking for all these things, and then, okay, right.
I mean, I couldn't disagree more. I thought it was a perfect ending in that it both tied everything up and left you thinking about the future.
Yeah. I mean,
it is your role on this podcast to be the grumpy git, unless for some bizarre reason it's an awful 1950s musical. But in which case, it's my role to be the grumpy git.
Although I like Brastoff. I did like Brastoff.
In the end, yes. We didn't think you were going to as we approached it.
I didn't think it was. No. But, I mean, this is the thing. The listener may wonder, why on earth did you watch four seasons of something which you don't really seem to like? Because I liked it. You know, I liked it. I just don't like myself. That's the thing.
Well,
this
slightly over half an hour podcast, Steve, there's really little we can do to help you.
anyway, so yes, I think that's it, isn't it?
We have succeeded at Succession.
Yes. So I think that was, I don't know what the listener thought. I don't really care. I thought that was quite a good discussion, actually. That was one of our better discussions. So I think all I need to do now as the designated host of this episode, well, to thank Emma for an illuminating, engaging conversation as ever. And to thank, to say this is a Political Human production, to get you to rate and review. And for our theme tune, I should thank Lord
Stuart Wood.
Stuart Wood of Anfield. For those nice tones.
Absolutely. Did you know that two people met under a YouTube video of Stuart Wood playing Jethro Tull and have now married? There you go. That's a bit of end of podcast trivia for you.
Right. Well, there'll be many pub quizzes with that question, I am sure. So our listener will benefit from knowing the answer to that question.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Take care.